The reading is taken from Leviticus chapter 16, and we're beginning at verse 7. Then Aaron is to take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting. He is to cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other for the scapegoat. Aaron shall bring the goat whose lot falls to the Lord and sacrifice it for a sin offering. But the goat chosen by lot to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to be used for making atonement by sending it into the wilderness as a scapegoat. In verse 15, he shall then slaughter the goat for the sin offering for the people and take its blood behind the curtain and do with it as he did with the bull's blood. He shall sprinkle it on the atonement cover and in front of it. In this way he will make atonement for the most holy place because of the uncleanness and rebellion of the Israelites, whatever their sins have been. He is to do the same for the tent of meeting, which is among them in the midst of their uncleanness. Verse 20. When Aaron had finished making atonement for the most holy place, the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall bring forward the live goat. He is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, and put them on the goat's head. He shall send the goat away into the wilderness in the care of someone appointed for the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins to a remote place, and the man shall release it in the wilderness. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Dorothy. Nick is now going to give us our sermon.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. So if you have been doing the Bible journey with us this last couple of weeks, it might have just got a little bit more challenging, or maybe a little bit more boring, I don't know which. And that's because we've been reading Leviticus together. And Leviticus is the point at which people usually give up if they've said to themselves, this year I'm going to read the Bible from cover to cover. And actually, if you get that far, you deserve an almighty pat on the back. To read Leviticus without any help whatsoever, without any background knowledge, is pretty impressive. So if you're still with us, well done. My task this morning is to ease your pain a little, if I can, by explaining something about this mysterious book so that we understand what's going on. But if you've ground to a halt this week, don't worry. By next week, I promise, it will all be over, and you can then drop back in with the next book in the Bible, Numbers. And I should warn you that at first, Numbers is going to seem even worse. It's nothing but lists of names. I mean, who on earth needs to know what order the Israelites marched in, for heaven's sake? Apparently we do. It's there in the Bible for us. But don't feel guilty if you skim that stuff. Hang in there, because there's some great stuff coming in Numbers. Watch out for the talking donkey. That's a real highlight. If you get that far, believe me, you've earned some comic relief. But if you are still tracking with us, yesterday you will have read the passage that Dorothy read for us this morning. It is the most important part in the whole book. And I hope to explain why in the next 10 minutes. So what is Leviticus all about? What is the point of this book in the Bible? Well, I can best explain that by taking us back to the end of the previous book, Exodus. So if you've got your Bible open, just flip back to page 101. If you haven't, here's some words on the screen from Exodus 40, verses 34 to 35. That final chapter of Exodus is Moses painstakingly assembling the tent of meeting. He's putting up poles, he's hanging curtains, he's putting tables and altars and great big bowls of water in place. He's hanging up candlesticks. He's putting it all together, ready to use. And when it's finished, we're told this: the cloud of God's glory covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. So, Houston, we have a problem. Moses has built a tent of meeting, but he can't have a meeting in it. Once God has moved in, Moses can't enter. There's a problem here. A sinful, flawed human being can't come into the presence of God and his holiness and his power and his majesty, all those words that we were calling out to God. He'd be just squashed flat. So what are we to do? Leviticus. That's what we are to do. The whole point of the book of Leviticus is to solve that problem for people, to make it possible for a holy God and an unholy people to actually have contact with each other. And I ought to say before I start that what we're describing here is the system that God put in place that no longer applies. And I'll come on to that at the end, because something very significant has happened after Leviticus took place and before our time. And that thing, or that person, is Jesus. And I will need to explain how the coming of Jesus and the death of Jesus changes it for us. That's to come. But let's give Leviticus its due for a few minutes. Let's see what's going on in this book, what it's all about, what it has to teach us. Let me describe to you the shape of the book. It's one of these sort of U shapes that you've heard me talk about before, and it explains the three main ways that God helps people to come into his presence. And the outer sections describe the rituals that God provides for the people. What's a ritual? Sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? Well, we're in the middle of one right now. Our service is a ritual. It's just something that we do. We know the pattern. We know what happens. We sing some songs. We have a Bible reading. Someone stands up and bores you to death for 15 minutes. And we end up eating bread and wine. That's what we do, isn't it? That's our ritual. And it focuses our minds. And it brings us into God's presence. Human beings love ritual. We do it all the time. Nothing to be ashamed of. And there are some rituals described in great and possibly weird detail in the book of Leviticus. The second thing is the priests. Now, again, there's a difference between priests then and priests now. Well, I'll explain as I go along. But it was very important that the people should have someone who would remind them about God. They would get busy with their lives, they'd be looking after their fields and their animals and their crops, and they needed someone to ring a bell or call them to worship or remind them to thank God that all these things they were enjoying had come from above. And that was the job of the priests. And they were also there to be mediators. They were there to stand in between God and the people who were busy with their lives and their preoccupations, and to bring the two together. And the priests and the tribe that they came from, the Levites, weren't given land when they moved into the promised land that they were on the way to. They were supported by the gifts from the other 11 tribes. They had to give a tenth of all they produced, and that was to support the final tribe, the Levite tribe, out of which came the priests. So the priests were set free from having to work so they could concentrate on God all day long. And this second section explains all about them. And then thirdly, as we move nearer to the centre of the book, there's a lot to be said about purity. There's a lot to be said on how Israel can deal with the fact that they're not pure and put those things aside in order to come into God's holy presence. So, we will see the first section, chapters 1 to 7, talks about sacrifices. There are five different types of sacrifice that are described there as ritual things that people can do as a way of acknowledging that something's gone wrong and making restitution. Whether that's something between them and God, or between them and someone else, or between them and their lives, whatever it might be, a sacrifice was specified that would solve their problem. Next, in chapters 8 to 10, are the instructions for ordaining the priests, for setting up this whole machinery of the priesthood. Then follows an explanation of what it means to be ritually pure or impure. And the words that you probably read were clean and unclean. And I prefer to use purity because talking about clean and unclean makes us think, well, is this like being dirty? No, it's not that. It's a more spiritual thing. On the other side of the centre of the book, there's a discussion about moral purity, about caring for the poor, about being sexually faithful, about living in the land in a just and fair way. And then there's more about the priests, and especially the fact that they were called to keep an even higher standard than the rest of the people. Because they had all day to concentrate on God, they were meant to have higher standards. And then finally, the seven ritual feasts are described. Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, Pentecost, trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and tabernacles. And each of those big festivals throughout the calendar year retold part of the story of God's rescue of his people, bringing them out of slavery and setting them on their way to the promised land. And the idea was that throughout the year they would be reminded every time they gathered for a festival that they were God's people, and it was thanks to God that they had this wonderful land to live in. It was so they wouldn't forget who they were and what God had done for them. Now, I've skipped over the central section, haven't I? Because what we've got there is one of the seven feasts pulled forward and plonked right in the middle of the book, quite deliberately. And this is the center not only of Leviticus, but also of the whole Torah, the first five books of the Bible, the most important section for Jewish people. This is the middle of the middle of the whole Torah, the description of the Day of Atonement. And you know by now, don't you, that in the Bible the most important thing is always in the middle, just like a sandwich. What sort of sandwich is it? It's a jam sandwich, it's a chicken sandwich, it's a cheese and pickle sandwich. You don't say it's a white bread sandwich or a wholemeal sandwich, do you? You describe it by what's in the middle. That's the important part of a sandwich. And this is the important part of Leviticus. The middle is what matters. Why couldn't Moses go into the tent of meeting? Because once God was there in all his holiness and purity, a sinful human being just couldn't be in the same place. Something needs to be done about our sin. Now, the system that God devised sounds very weird to our ears. Animal sacrifice? Really? But stick with it and watch how it works. When the people listen to God and complete the sacrifices he instructs, God allows the death of these animals to cover over or atone for the sin that would otherwise be experienced by people. And the nature of these sacrifices allows people to see and taste and smell the devastating consequences of the harm that we cause to one another. They were commanded to take an animal, which was a valuable thing. They didn't have money like we do, credit cards. Animals were currency. And not just a duff one that wasn't going to live to maturity. They had to give the best. It had to be pure and unblemished. And they had to sacrifice it to God, often by burning it completely. So this was a costly thing to do, to understand what damaged relationships cost. But also it brought people the relief of forgiveness. When people offer sacrifices, God makes a clean space free of death and corruption, a space where God and human beings can come together. And this healing of relationships is what Leviticus is all about. So, this Day of Atonement, how's it meant to work? Well, every year, the high priest would take two goats. One would become a purification offering and atone for the sins of the people, and the other was called the scapegoat. And the priest would confess the sins of Israel and symbolically place his hands on the goat's head. And all their wickedness and all their mistakes and all their frailties for the past 12 months would be transferred onto that poor little goat, which would be led out into the desert and then untied and shooed away. Very graphic image, isn't it? This little goat is like a dust cart carrying the people's sins away. Shall I get technical for a minute? Can you cope with that? Won't be long. Just give me 60 seconds. There is a problem with this word scapegoat. There's a very funny word in Hebrew that occurs four times in this passage and nowhere else in the whole Bible. So we get no other clue as to what it might mean. The word is Azazel. Azazel. And who or what is that, is the question. There's a couple of theories. It could be a compound word from Ez, which was the word for a goat, and Azel, which is to depart. So it's the goat that departs. Or it could be the name of a spiritual being that lived in the desert. Azazel. And we don't really know which. Most of our translations plump for the word scapegoat, which is this goat that departs. But it could equally well be that this goat is being sent to Azazel. What does that mean? It's not a sacrifice to some other god or spirit or anything like that. Because remember what this goat is carrying. He's carrying the people's rubbish. Basically, it's an insult to Azazel, isn't it? It's sending him a load of junk. But whatever it is, whether the word describes the goat or the goat's destination, the point is the same. It's getting rid of the rubbish. So, in conclusion, can we see whether Leviticus works or not? Just turn to Leviticus 1, verse 1, and that you'll find on page 102, where it says, "The Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting." Got that? So where's Moses? He's outside. And then inside, it's God speaking, saying all the words of Leviticus, giving him all the commands, okay? They're not together. Now turn to Numbers 1, verse 1, which you'll find on page 133. And look what it says, the first words of Numbers. The Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting. Not from, in. And that means that Leviticus works. Moses has got in. He wasn't in at the end of Exodus. He wasn't in while Leviticus was happening. But now the system is in place. Moses is in the tent. God and people have come together. Now, as I said earlier, and as Nicky Gumbel pointed out when we read this yesterday, Jesus fulfills this atonement ritual. The high priest had to repeat it every year. Next year, there'll be some more sins to be loaded on the goat's head and sent out into the desert. Jesus sacrificed himself once for all. And the language that's used to describe Jesus' death is absolutely littered with language from Exodus and Leviticus. At the Last Supper, he merges words from the Passover with language that's used in Leviticus to describe the blood of sacrificial animals poured out. Jesus shows himself to be both the fulfillment of the Passover and of the Day of Atonement. In fact, Jesus is, if you like, both of the goats that were used on the Day of Atonement. One goat was killed to make the holy place pure. The other goat was sent away to carry people's sins. But Jesus atoned for humanity and makes a way for God and humans to dwell together. Just like the goat that was sent out, Jesus suffered and died outside the city of Jerusalem, near a burial plot, an unclean place. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Those are words from Isaiah, but they pick up on this Leviticus language, don't they? And they apply it to Jesus. So when the author of Hebrews says it's impossible for the blood of animals to take away sins, this isn't new information. We kind of knew that already. It doesn't work, the system described in Leviticus, not perfectly. You have to redo it every year. Animal sacrifices were always seen as a temporary means to an end, which would eventually be satisfied in the sacrifice of Jesus and the ongoing, ultimate display of the Father's love for humanity. Nicky Gumbel has got a very simple illustration of how it works that he uses in the Alpha Course. He says it's like this. If you imagine my two hands, this one is me, this one is Jesus. And God is up there. And in between me and Jesus, there is a blockage. That's my sin. That prevents me from having a relationship with God. Can't get through. What did Jesus do? The Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. So now my way to God is clear, and Jesus is carrying my sin. And what did Jesus do with it? He died. He was buried. And he rose again. And so now, I can be in relationship with God, in fellowship with Jesus. And that's the glory of the faith that we share today, isn't it? So there we are. That's Leviticus, a way of bringing people back to God and a way that points forward to what we can be. And who are we in this story? You and I. We're the priests. all of us. Do you remember what the priest was for? It was someone who has one hand reaching out to the things of God and the other hand reaching out to everybody else and bringing them together. And that's what you and I are called to. Not just me, the priest, we are all priests in God's church. And our job is to have one hand in touch with God and the other hand reaching out to people that we can bring the two together so that we can bring others into the fire of his love. Leviticus gives us an illustration of what God has made complete in Jesus Christ. Amen.